As we've reached this point in Numbers, as we're coming up to more or less kind of the halfway, more than halfway through Numbers, and we're making kind of a transition period in this. I wanted to kind of ask you real briefly. So what have you seen in Numbers? What has Numbers taught you? I'm not going to put you in the spot and ask for a particular chapter or verse or message or whatever. But as we come into this part about Aaron's bud and a rod that blooms and blossoms, what have you seen in Numbers that either surprised you, that you didn't expect to see? Yeah.
Course of events, even in Numbers, the gospel of Jesus Christ. You've been able to discover and see in there, and it's just it's just amazing.
Hmm. It goes back to what we talked that so often, just beginning with Genesis and seeing Christ all the way through there. Thank you.
Matt, for me, it's my own wilderness experience.
Isn't it so amazing when we see them? And we'll talk about it again, even this morning, their rebellion, their grumbling. Anyone else? What have you seen in Numbers? For me, Rick, is that seeing that seeing myself in Numbers so much, seeing that rebellion, that's probably the one thing I've seen more than anything else. Well, so look at Numbers this morning. Numbers 17. It's funny, this is a short chapter. It's a pretty well-known story. I think most of us know the story. As we look and see this grumbling, the people have got to a point, the question we saw in Korah's rebellion, and even afterwards we saw them questioning Moses' authority, questioning God's choice in Moses as leader. And this is certainly not anything new. They've done it several times in the book of Numbers. In Numbers 12, we saw even Aaron and Miriam questioning Moses as they came to him in 12 and said, "Has God spoken only through Moses? Only through you? Has he not also spoken to us? So what about us?" And then in 14:5, they wanted to stone Moses. They got to the point where they wanted to. He said in Numbers 14:10, then all the congregation said to stone them with stones. They wanted to stone Moses and pick their own leader in place. So them questioning Moses as leader is not anything new, And then again, as we read last week in Korah's rebellion, here was Korah, one of Moses' cousin, also the tribe of Levi, says, "What about us? Can't we do it?" And then finally, even after that, as we read last week, the very next day after Korah and the 250 and the sons of Judah were the ground opened up and swallowed them up. The very next day they came and were questioning once again Moses' authority and Moses' leadership. And so that brings us to Numbers 17. Once again, they are as if, God's heard all that, and he's heard all that. It's almost God said, "All right, we're going to put this to rest once and for all," even though it really doesn't. In Numbers 17, let's read this chapter. Numbers 17, 1 through 13. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and get from them staffs, one from each father's house, from all their chiefs according to their father's house, 12 staffs. Write each man's name on his staff. Write Aaron's name on the staff of Levi, for there shall be one staff for the head of each father's house. Then you shall deposit them in the tent of meeting before the testimony, where I meet with you. And the staff of the man whom I choose shall sprout. Thus I will make to cease from me the grumbling of the people of Israel, which they grumble against you. Moses spoke to the people of Israel, and all the chiefs gave staffs, one for each chief according to their father's house, 12 staffs. And the staff of Aaron was among the staffs. And Moses deposited the staffs before the Lord in the tent of testimony. On the next day, Moses went into the tent of testimony, and behold, the staff of Aaron for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Then Moses brought out all the staffs from before the Lord to all the people of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his staff. And the Lord said to Moses, put back the staff of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign for the rebels, that you may make an end of their grumbling against me, lest they die. So thus did Moses, as the Lord commanded him, so he did. And the people of Israel said to Moses, behold, we perish. We are undone. We are all undone. Everyone who comes near the tabernacle of the Lord shall die. Are we all to perish? I'm fine. So God has reached the point. He said, I'm going to stop to their grumbling. I'm going to stop them grumbling against Moses and Aaron. I'm going to show them once for all that these are my people. These are who I've chosen. This is, for lack of a better word, my elect. I have elected Moses and Aaron, and I'm going to show all the people that these are mine. And God said, and he chooses this way to do it. And, you know, as I read that, I thought, well, you know, if this was the goal, just to stop them grumbling and complaining, God, why didn't you do it a year and a half before? You know? I mean, we think about this. When Moses first said, I'm going to go back to them, Moses knew, said, how am I going to prove that I'm of you? And God said, God gave him the two tests. Remember, one, throw your staff down and it'll become a snake. The other, put your hand inside your cloak and it brings out, it'll be leprosy, and put it back. And he said, and so all of this. So God has been given these signs that God was with Moses repeatedly. And so I thought, so what is it about this sign that is going to stop them from grumbling and complaining? What is it that's going to be so unique about this? And what's interesting about this is we find later on they still grumble and complain again. We have another one yet to come in this. And so God said, God said, I'm going to stop their grumbling and complaining. So this is something going on here, something important that we need to look and see as God brings this out, this rod that perishes, that's going to bloom. And so what God is going to do is God's going to reveal his choice. God is going to reveal his election. He's going to say, I have chosen Aaron. I have chosen Moses. They are my elect, and I'm going to reveal this. And he does this through the staff, through this picture of authority. And, you know, we all know what a staff is. We've seen them. You know, we've seen pictures of them. They were to keep the sheep in line. You know, the shepherd would hold the staff, and it would be used for defense, for as a weapon. It would be used for guiding. It would be all these things. And God said, he had this was the plan. He said, take from all the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe, from the chief, take their staff and write the name on it, bring it into the tent of testimony, and through this, I'm going to reveal my election. And the way that God is going to reveal His choice is through life. He's going to make it live. Here's this dead piece of wood that's been cut down. It's dried. It's stiff. It's hard. It's dead. Through life. Life is going to be the evidence of God's choice. You know, and it's interesting. He didn't say how he's going to do this. God said, all right, take those 12 staffs and put them in the tabernacle, in the testimony, and I'm going to show you which one I've chosen. And he didn't show them. He didn't say, now, in the next morning, the one that blossoms, the one. No, he said, I'm going to make it clear to you. You know, and I wonder if they thought about it. So what's it going to be? What's God going to do? How is God going to show us which one? You know, if one get bigger, will the rest of them going to disappear? How is it going to happen? But God uses life. And we shouldn't be surprised at that, should we? That the one that God has chosen, that one has life. You know, in John 11:25, at the resurrection of Lazarus, when Martha comes up and she's saying, had you been here, Lazarus would not have died. Jesus tells her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he dies, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord. I believe you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. Jesus is life. God is life. To be connected to him is to be alive. To be connected to Jesus Christ is to be alive. To be separated from him is to be dead. That is death. Separation from God is death. And you may have a heartbeat, you may have all of these things, but if you're not connected to him, you are dead. And so the evidence that this is the one that God has chosen is life. And the interesting thing is the evidence of life is fruit. How do you know a tree is alive? If I went out today and I cut down a tree and I brought it down here and I stuck it into a pot, and it may have green, it may have all of these things, but how are you going to know that it's alive? The tree that's alive produces fruit. So while life is the evidence of God's choice, fruit is the evidence of life. You know, but sometimes it takes time. You can't tell if it's alive or dead in a snapshot. You see a picture of something. You may look at it once and you look, oh man, that is so beautiful. It is so alive. Or you could look at a tree and say, that tree is dead. You ever looked at a tree and just thought, man, that tree is deader than a doornail. It's dead. But yet, a little time and a little attention, and you see greenery around it. I love the story of Luke 13:6-9. Jesus is telling about the parable, and we're seeing life in a tree. Luke 13:6-9. And he told this parable. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit on it and found none. So he had this fig tree, and he wanted figs. He came out looking for it. There was no fruit on it. And he said to the vine dresser, look, for 3 years now, I've been coming seeking fruit on this fig tree, and I find none. It's useless. It's dead. Cut it down. Clear the space for something else. Why should it use up this ground? And the vine dresser answered him, and he answered him, sir, let it alone this year also, until I dig around it and put on manure. Then it should bear fruit next year. Well and good. But if not, you can cut it down. Beverly mentioned that this morning. Sometimes we're so quick to look at something and say, man, that thing is dead. It's dead. But you never know. I mean, you know, you look at it and say, now you can look at it and say, there's something wrong here. Something's not, it's not producing fruit right now. It should be, but it's not. But that doesn't give us the right to judge and say it's dead. That's God's prerogative. Sometimes it takes a little more time. Sometimes God has a little more pruning to do, a little more cutting to do, a little more work to do in that fruit tree to produce fruit. But sometimes, and we know that it really is dead. All the cutting, all the trimming, all the pruning, all the work will not produce life. It's dead. But you can't tell in a snapshot. God knows the heart. We don't. But it's producing fruit. Is the evidence of life. So what is the fruit? What is the fruit? You know, it's funny. As I've said before, by God's grace, I have a great memory for sermons. And I remember sermons so well. And so many sermons I can think back to. And fruit, and this is back during, you know, the 70s and 80s and late 60s. And you guys probably, a lot of you can remember back those sermons. The fruit at that time was always other believers. I mean, I heard it preached so often that the fruit of believers is other believers. That if you're not evangelizing, if you're not seeing people come to faith through your life, then you're not producing fruit. I mean, I remember hearing that so often. And I mean, I remember feeling guilty with that. Oh man. And we kind of went away from that, haven't we? And we were off on this ditch over here that the fruit had to be other believers. That if the fruit tree, I mean, I heard the saying, the fruit tree of an apple is another apple tree. You know, the fruit tree of an apple tree is another apple tree. Well, we kind of left that. Now we're saying, well, the fruit of the Spirit is just this personal life. You know, it's the you know, Galatians 5:22 passage, love, joy, peace, gentle, patience, kindness. You know, this is the fruit that it's talking about. And so it's all over here now. But I think the reality is somewhere between the two. I think the reality is somewhere. Certainly the fruit of the Spirit is one of the fruits that this is talking about. That when God takes something dead, and he touches it, he reveals his choice, he reveals his election, it's going to produce fruit. I mean, this staff produced almonds. It wasn't enough that it had life. It wasn't enough that it blossomed. It had life and blossomed and produced fruit, which says something else about the whole idea of time, you know? I mean, we know that most of us know enough about fruits, trees, to say, you know, from the blossom, then it dies, and from that you get the fruit. But God is not limited by time, is he? He can do it all that quickly. So this, just as this tree, this rod produces fruit, everything that is connected to God, everything that God chooses, it's like produces fruit. And as I said, certainly the fruit of the Spirit is one of the fruits we're talking about. That there must be love. There must be joy. There must be peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. These are the fruits of the Spirit. This is what it means to be connected to God. That certainly these will be coming out. But these aren't the only fruits. We also have in Hebrews the fruit of praise. Hebrews 13:15-16. Through him, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of lips that acknowledge his name. Do not neglect to do good and share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. We are called upon as believers to share our fruit, to praise his name among others. This is the fruit in our life. This is what it means to share Christ, is praise him. In Hebrews, it says, you know, that this is the sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of our lips that acknowledge his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. So this fruit, this evidence of fruit, is this internal spiritual change. It is these things that are these almost intangibles. But then there's also this joy in just sharing and speaking and praising God. That's what it looks like when God touches a life. And when God reveals himself, look at what happens when God has revealed himself to the people. When Moses brings out this rod and sets it before them, and they see this staff that's blossomed, this revelation of God, notice their reaction in verse 12. And the people of Israel said to Moses, "Behold, we perish. We are undone. We are all undone." Wait. So let me get this right. Let me understand this. You saw 250 demolished with fire. You saw the ground open up and swallow these people. You saw the miracles, all of these things happen. And here comes Moses out with a staff with some almonds on it, and you're oh my goodness, now you're undone? You know? Now? You're repenting? Really? Really? Seeing the ground open up and swallow people? And the next day you come and complain? You see a staff of the almonds? And you're undone? I'm reading this and whoa. You know? But when God reveals himself, this was the revelation of who God is. Look at the reaction of the people. There's conviction. They recognize their sin. Behold, we perish. We are undone. We are all undone. And with conviction came fear. See, there was, it's so amazing what happens, what every time happens when God reveals himself. And make no mistake, this is the revelation of God. Turn with me to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 8. As we look at a slightly different picture of this. For most of you know that there were three things in the ark. There were three things in the ark. There was the commandments, the law, the testimonies. There was the manna, and there was Aaron's staff that budded. The three things that were in the ark. And as I told Matt when I read this, I thought, wait a minute. So this is going to be a continual reminder to you not to grumble. This is going to stop you from grumbling. But yet, at the same time, they took this rod, and they put it in the ark, and they never saw it again. You know, it was, no one ever saw the ark. It went to the Holy of Holies. And the high priest didn't even see it again. So I was stunned by this. How in the world can this be? Can this stop them from grumbling if they never see it again? And yes, I have the testimony. I understand this. But there's something a lot more deeper that's happening here. There's something a lot more important that's happening here. And if we look in Hebrews chapter 8, as he is talking about Jesus the high priest, and Jesus the high priest bringing a better covenant. So we're talking about this new covenant that's coming, the covenant that we live under, the covenant that we have hope in. As the writer of Hebrews is talking about that, in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 13, he says, in speaking of new covenant, he makes the first one obsolete. And what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. Now, even the first covenant had regulations for worship and for an earthly place of holiness. For a tent was prepared, the first section in which were the lampstand and the table and the bread of the presence. He called it the holy place. Behind the curtain was a second section called the most holy place, having the golden altar of incense, the ark of the covenant covered on all sides, which is gold, in which was a golden urn holding the manna, and Aaron's staff that budded, and the tablets of the covenant. Above it were cherubim of glory overshadowing the mercy seat. Of these things we cannot now speak in detail, which I know you guys have heard before. I hate those words. It's like, let's speak about these in detail, please. You know, but by God's grace, that's something for us to look forward to, right? We get to hear about these things in detail. Back to the reading of Hebrews. So these preparations have been made. The priests go regularly into the first section, performing their ritual duties. But into the second section where the Ark of the Covenant is, into the second section where that Aaron's staff lays, it's in that second section, that most holy section. But into the second section, the high priest goes, and he but once a year, and he did, and not without taking blood, which he offers for himself, and for the unintentional sins of the people. Here's this rod that budded, that he takes and he lays in the Ark of the Covenant, that goes into the most holies, that the high priest alone goes in and does. The high priest, this is his. He goes in there once a year. And as we know, the picture is Christ goes in once for all. And this, all of this is a picture of this new covenant, this new testimony. And so he's saying that this rod, this picture of this staff is this great work of this high priest that he alone is going to do. He's going to do this rod. He's going to bring life from death. And he's going to stop the grumbling and complaining. None of the warnings, seeing people die, seeing all this happen, does not stop the rebels, is it? Does it? It still doesn't. They're still going to complain later on in Numbers. It is God taking that dead, lifeless stick by his grace and by his choice and touching it and bringing life out of it and bringing fruit out of it. That's what stops the grumbling. That's what stops the murmuring. That's what's going to change our lives. And you know, as we think about this, one of the questions that I ask myself, do people see God's election in my life, God's choice in my life, so much that they have conviction and fear? Do people see that? Do they see me? They see what God has done in me. They see this life that's changed, that's been touched, that's producing fruit so much that they have conviction and fear. And I don't know. I don't know. This is part of my inadequacy, my overwhelming feeling of inadequacy in this sermon. I wish I could say yes. And then I wrote that last question where you get to fill in yourself. Blank is the evidence of God working in my life. And I thought, what would I write there? What is this life-changing, life-giving, fruit-producing evidence that God has in my life? And far too often, I don't know what I would write there. And so my response to this sermon was one of conviction. I felt incredibly convicted. And here's the interesting thing. This is what the great part about it is. This is what to me is the most exciting part about this chapter. What did the rod have to do to be changed? It was in God's presence. It just laid there in the presence of God, in the tent of meetings, in the tabernacle. It was laid before God. Guess what? I can do that. I can lay before God. I can ask Him to touch me, change me, produce fruit in my life. This is what we do. This is what the great part about the conviction is. Conviction should not cause you to go out and try harder to put it out to produce fruit. Conviction should make you go before the tabernacle meetings and lay before God and say, God, you got to change me. You got to do it. Because this is your work. This is your work. This is in the Holy of Holies. This is where you go. This is what you do. That's the work of the rod. That's the work of the rod. Just to lay there in the tabernacle. Touch me. Just lay before God. You know, and when was the last time you just laid before God? You just lay there and said, God, if you don't touch me and change me. You know, I have to, and this part of my, conviction. When I lived overseas, one of my directors, he had a rule for his team, and the rule was you had to take spiritual retreats on your own. You had to plan them, and you had to take them, and you didn't tell them what you did. You just had to say, all right, I'm going to these for this weekend or this day or whatever, and he would recommend at least once a quarter take a day, and once a year take a weekend, and you would, for this weekend, I'm completely unavailable to everybody. And just, he said, go and just lay before the Lord. Don't go with an agenda. Just go and just lay before the Lord. And those were some of the, I love conferences, and those were some of the greatest conferences, just me and God, you know? And I've gotten out of that habit. And I must confess, that was bad. I need those. I need those times. And I would pray, I would ask your prayers that I would seek that again. Because I do, I feel very, very convicted over the sermon. I don't believe. And here's the thing about fruit. You know, fruit, as you know, fruit doesn't, I mean, it can. And we can't, it's not an excuse, but fruit has a tendency to come and go. And right now in my life, I just don't feel like I'm producing fruit as God would have me to. But I think the bigger one of the things is, and I know what it is, we know John 15, you know, if we don't abide in him, we can do nothing. So I that would be my prayer that I would ask for you. Pray that God would lead me to spend more time just laying in that tabernacle. I love the way Moses puts it. I can picture that scene, you know, of Moses as he takes it. And he says, "And Moses deposited the staffs before the Lord in the tent of testimony." Just took them, laid them down there. May that be us. Spending our time laying before the Lord. Let's stand. Mark, come lead us in song.